This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
818 now, joined by Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, to look at the Saints 2025 season, look ahead to 2026. How you doing, Steve?
Doing all right, Tommy. Definitely sad that another season's in the books.
Yeah, it went by pretty quick. I'm going to tell you what, we know we have our little poll here where we predict the number of wins and losses, and apparently I nailed it with 6 wins. I wish it had been more than that, but I got to tell you what, and listening to Deuce and Mike Haas on Sunday, and you know, Deuce said, "We coming," and he paraphrased Deion Sanders, and I think he's right. I think the Saints are coming in 2026. Give me your thoughts on the season looking back on it.
Yeah, what a way the team finished. Lots of positives considering how the year started. We know the beginning wasn't the greatest, and it kind of looked like, oh no, we're going to be destined for a top three draft pick after the slow start for this team. But things, once Tyler Shuck was named the starting quarterback, he came in the second half against the Rams game, and then, I mean, he went on to win, you know, 5 games in the 9 starts he made, and you kind of saw a team starting to believe in themselves. The guy that made everyone around him better is what you want from a quarterback, and when Tyler Shuck came in, things definitely started to move better on this offense. The biggest problem, though, a constant issue that's got to be addressed in the offseason, is the slow starts. I don't know how to remedy that except for maybe, you know, get guys body clocks working differently. But it was just really amazing to see this year, the first quarter especially, how dismal the Saints were, and then later on the game able to come back and pick things up. But playing from behind, we know, isn't the most ideal thing. I'm with you, though. A lot of positives right now. Everyone talks about it. Looks like you've got your quarterback. It sure seems like we've got the coach. Can you continue now hitting on the draft, get those free agents in here that are going to make a difference for this squad? And shoot, we know the NFC South is no dynamite powerhouse right now with the way the Panthers, you know, ended up sneaking in to being the division champs, not just the playoffs. They won the division sneaking in thanks to the Atlanta Falcons beating the Saints in that tiebreaker against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, man, we saw the Saints, the depleted Saints team, being able to sweep the Carolina Panthers this year. So I would definitely say tons of positive energy going into this offseason. Even though it was a 6-10 season, yeah, there's still a lot to like. A 6-11 season, I should say.
Let's talk about some of the free agents. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 8:21 more with Steve Geller. When we come back, you heard the sports report from Steve about Cam Jordan, and I can't imagine him putting anybody else's uniform on. I hope they manage to work it out. We'll talk about DeMario Davis, some of the other guys that are getting a little bit older, and what next year's team is likely to look like. And actually, this year's team at the end didn't look anything like it did at the beginning when you look at receiver, et cetera. 8:22, traffic now, WWL. Whoopsie, 8:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, talking about the Saints 2025, looking ahead to 2026. Give me some names of some institutions, some Saints institutions that may or may not be on the field in 2026 for the black and gold.
Yeah, I think the biggest talked about names right now, Tommy, for the Saints coming back for next year, being the big question marks because of age. The Mario Davis linebacker, the stud that seems to never age, though. Another guy, too, Cam Jordan, the just Mr. Reliable, always available. And Taysom Hill, we saw him after the home finale, really emotional in that post-game speech, and it kind of felt like, oh no, this is the end for him. Out of those three, I don't know if Taysom Hill is coming back to football, much less the Saints. He hasn't made any comments, unlike DeMario Davis and Cam Jordan, who said, heck yeah, they're ready to play next year, and they hope that they're back in black and gold. But yeah, we're going to see how things work out. Obviously, the price is going to be the big deal for these veteran guys.
Do you see, you know, I mean, Cam, look, it's easy to say, it's easy to be frivolous with somebody else's money, right? But do you see Cam?
Right, exactly.
Do you see Cam going anywhere else?
It's hard to envision it, Tommy. He's just such a stud when it comes to on the field. We saw a resurgence. He led the team in sacks this season with 10.5. And it's not just that. I love his makeup, his mentality, what he stands for.
Roots in the community,
too. Yep. What was that?
I said roots in the community. That's exactly what you said.
Yeah, every single Tuesday, this guy's going to a school during the season, making impressions on the youth in the city, and just the amount of work he does. He just seems like the very definition to me of talent and a guy for the community that every franchise wishes they had. And DeMario Davis the same way. So I'm very biased, too. And like you said, it's easy for me to spend the Saints' money. I would definitely keep both guys around since they are still performing at that high level. DeMario led the team in tackles, and Cam Jordan just led the team in sacks.
So when it comes to draft, who do you think the Saints...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To be looking at in the draft.
Yeah, for me, I'm definitely looking at more of the trenches or at wide receiver. I know a lot of folks have fallen in love with the running back.
Yeah,
running back Jeremiah Love, everybody keeps talking about as a potential pick for them at 8th overall. I don't want to take a running back that early, but that's just me. I want to build more, either another pass rusher. I know it's not going to be the sexiest thing for Saints fans. The offensive line, especially the interior, needs so much help. And then wide receiver, I know, you know, Chris Olave, and we saw some things from Devon Valet, but I just feel like you could use that bigger, tight body, physical receiver to pair up with this Saints offense and give Tyler Shuck as many targets as possible, please.
I never thought I'd be referring to an NFL coach as a young man, but that young man, Kellen Moore, he's only 37. He showed me something this season as far as surrendering the results to the process.
Yeah, and man, Tommy, he is an all-pro in addressing the media. He doesn't say much, and he's just knows what to do for his team. Son of a coach, and hoping he can continue to build this roster into that NFC South winner next season.
Born on the 5th of July in, you ready for this, 1988.
Oof.
Wow. Yeah, oof is right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it as always. Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. We'll talk to John Fitzmaurice about the Washington Artillery. We pass by it every time in Jackson Square. Maybe you know what it is, maybe you don't, but we'll talk about it when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 8:46, 14 till 9. Hang on to yourselves here. Well, hang on to you, whatever, your seats, because we're going to learn something here. I saw the cannon in Washington, in Jackson Square, the Washington Artillery, and got me to wondering, what the hell's all that about? And I've passed it Lord knows how many times. John Fitzmaurice joins us, an instructor of history at UNO. Good morning, John. How are you? Happy New Year.
Good morning and Happy New Year to you, Tommy.
There are things all over the city that we walk past every day, and we have no earthly idea the history behind them. True?
Not just true, but very, very true.
Very, very true. Two verys. Good. Let's talk about the 141st Field Artillery Regiment, or the Washington Artillery. Tell me the story behind that.
Well, every colony that was established, either by England or France or Spain and so forth, almost immediately had a militia in order to defend itself against attacks, either through native tribes or against one of the other European powers. And Louisiana was no exception. And so the Washington Artillery traces its origins back to the days of Bienville and Perrier, and then the Spanish colonization of Louisiana, or administration of Louisiana as well. Now, the Washington Artillery was actually founded officially on September the 7th, 1838. But like I said, the origins go way back to colonial Louisiana.
Does it still exist, or is the only remnant the cannon?
Oh, no, no. It is still very much in existence. It is headquartered today at Jackson Barracks. It's called now today the 256th Infantry Combat Team Fire Battalion, and it's part of the Louisiana National Guard. Its current commander is Major Michael Lacoste.
Tell me about the history of defending, I guess, the city and the country of the field artillery, the Washington Artillery.
Well, after the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, Louisiana, of course, needed to reconstitute a militia on the American model. And so they took the old French and Spanish militia battalions, and they put it together as an artillery battalion. And then, of course, after 1815, the militia then begins to choose the name George Washington as its title for patriotic fervor from, the 1815 to the 1830s. But, of course, many in the artillery at the time said Washington was named after their artillery, not their artillery after Washington.
Tell me how the tiger came to be the mascot.
Well, over time, Louisiana's artillery and its militia was so well trained that even Robert E. Lee at the Battle of First Manassas said that Louisianians fought for him like tigers. And,
okay.
And the name stuck. And hence, we have a small football team up in Baton Rouge that now bears that moniker as well.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're talking about the Washington Artillery with John Fitzmaurice, instructor of history at my alma mater, I'm proud to say, UNO. 850, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:55, 5 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We like to take a varied approach here in the morning, and we're going to try to spend some time this year talking about some things that we walk past every day, and we take them for granted. And as John Fitzmaurice, instructor of history at my alma mater, UNO, said, it happens very, very often where we don't know what the heck it is, and we just take it for granted. So the 101st Field Artillery Regiment, the Washington Artillery, founded in 1838, most recent action, as I understand it, was in 2021, I think it is, or 2020 to 2021. It deployed to Iraq and Syria as part of the 256th Infantry Brigade in support of Operation Inherent Resolve. How would the makeup of the soldiers differ from 1838 to today's soldier in terms of...
It's a far more professional organization now than it was back then. And this is not to denigrate the men who served in the Washington Artillery back in 1838, but it was more of a sort of an elite gentleman's club that was established. And they were very fiercely independent and wanted to stay that way. And they resisted many attempts to, integrate them further into the army. Over time.
So were they paramilitary, John, or part of the military?
I would not call them paramilitary because they never operated outside of the military structure. They were always a part of the military structure, but they always maintained their independence from the military to a certain degree. Not in the sense that they would go where they were told, they would fight when they were told, but they maintained a sense of autonomy with it.
Were these people of means?
Yes, they were the social elites of New Orleans and Louisiana. In fact, it became a sign of status that I was a member of the Washington Artillery back in the day. And that goes all the way back to Captain James Walton, who's considered the father of the Washington Artillery. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the first commander of the Washington Artillery, but he's the one that began making it into a true fighting force to be reckoned with.
So when it comes to training, obviously there's a different standard for training now than there was then. Did they go about training themselves, or was it an art form unto itself because they were of means?
It was sort of a combination of both, in that they were men of means, and so they used their own resources oftentimes to do that, but they did submit to military training from time to time. They were very particular about choosing their own commanders, but at a certain point they accepted the fact that they needed to accept an outside commander from the military to stay within. And this is how, for instance, Stonewall Jackson's grandson became commander of the Washington Artillery in the early 20th century.
What would their greatest accomplishment be if you had, as a historian, to align one or assign one to the Washington Artillery?
I think that they set the standard for the development of state militias along a very professional line. They were very strong on professional development, military development as well. And I think that they were very key and integral also during the Second World War, when Louisiana's maneuvers took place in Western Louisiana.
Well, Louisiana's what took place? I want to hear that part, John.
The Louisiana maneuvers, which were the military exercises that took place in Western Louisiana prior to and during the Second World War, because Western Louisiana was so wide open that the tank commanders were able to use that as a training ground. This is why we have Fort Polk. And then after that, the Washington Artillery took part in that as well. And they set the standard for professional training.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the information as always. We're going to do that this year, man. We're going to educate ourselves about all the stuff that surrounds us. We'll be back talking to Arthur Hardy on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.